The Taliban now control 12 of Afghanistan's provinces. As of today, Thursday, August the 12th, they took the cities of Kandahar, Herat, and my beloved Ghazni, where I served as an embedded combat advisor in 2008. The Association of Wartime Allies is tracking that there are over 700 people in Kandahar, over 500 people in Herat. And then when you add up the other provinces that the Taliban have seized in just the last week alone, the number of wartime allies that we fear are now trapped behind enemy lines is in excess of around 2,000 people. When the Taliban took the border crossing of Spin Buldak, which is a border crossing that's on the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan, about 3 weeks ago, as soon as they consolidated control of the city, they then went door to door looking for anyone who had worked either for the U.S. military, with the U.S. military or the U.S. government, and anybody who is an Afghan government official. If they were able to find these people and identify them as such, they pulled them from their homes and they executed them along with their entire families. We fear that this is going to be replicated now, city by city, where the Taliban have taken control. That border crossing in Spin Buldak was actually the turning point. It was a critical moment because in seizing it, it allowed the Taliban to now have an unfettered flow of fighters and weapons that are streaming in from Pakistan, from the tribal areas around Quetta. This reserve army is being sent into Afghanistan, seemingly with the support of the Pakistani military and the Pakistani intelligence services. And they're fighting a broad-scale war of attrition. Their goal is simple: wear down the Afghan military everywhere. They understand that they'll lose a lot of fighters, and they have thus far along the way. The Afghan military, in some cases, have really made the Taliban suffer some serious losses. But the Taliban don't care. Their goal is to outbleed the Afghans, just as it was to outbleed us. Because they know that eventually they'll kill. But while the Taliban will suffer their own losses, they will also extract their own toll on the Afghans, and that there isn't a reserve army waiting for the Afghans. We were their reserve army, and we're gone. Unfortunately, Afghans themselves are also seeing the writing on the wall, and there are many cases where military units are simply switching sides or just, you know, giving up and going home without a fight. The Afghan military can't fight the Taliban everywhere, and that seems to be where the Taliban has chosen to engage the Afghans. In the last week alone, the Afghan military has seemingly collapsed in the north, in the west, in the south, which now leaves the road to Kabul wide open and only the east standing as the last bastion of safety. Interestingly, the true Taliban special forces, the Haqqani Taliban, who are the ones who are most often responsible for large-scale assaults and suicide bombings, and you think of all the horrific urban disasters that you've heard about in Afghanistan and its major cities over the last decade or so, those are usually the Haqqanis. They have yet to be engaged, and that makes me very concerned. Unfortunately, the other thing that the Taliban have begun to do is they've begun to assassinate the pilots who fly Afghanistan's nascent air force. We've already told you about the fact that they've bought surface-to-air missiles from Russia and China and have publicly said that they intend to use them on Afghanistan's Air Force once we leave. You know, the Afghan Air Force is the only strategic advantage that they have over the Taliban on the battlefield right now. The Taliban do not have an Air Force other than some drones of their own. The Afghans, however, have helicopters and a modern version of P-51 Mustangs, which were fighter pilot. Fighters from World War II, there's modern versions of that the Afghans now have. Once those are shot out of the sky, because the Taliban surface-to-air missiles will absolutely make short work of the limited aircraft that the Afghans have, at that point, that's it. Nothing will stand in the way of the Taliban from taking Kabul. The U.S. intelligence community, gave an assessment to the president that was leaked a couple of days ago, in which they updated their belief that Kabul could fall within a matter as early as 30 days. But with the fall of Kandahar and Herat and Ghazni as of just today, and the encirclement of Mazar-e-Sharif in the north as of yesterday, it's clear that Kabul might fall within a matter of days. And that is truly frightening, because as we've told you before, Afghanistan is completely entrenched by its neighbors. There are millions of people in Kabul, literally millions of people in Kabul, who are in threat and in jeopardy if the Taliban take over. They have nowhere to go. And the Taliban have made it abundantly clear that they intend to extract a serious and bloody and brutal toll on anyone who they feel is worthy of their evil, which, you know, the list now seems to include women, poets, musicians, politicians, human rights advocates, not just, you know, the wartime allies that we've been so desperate to, you know, evacuate, but seemingly anybody who stands in the way of their abhorrent ideology and their perverse worldview. You know, it's hard talking about all this because those of us who've served in Afghanistan, I always argue there are two types of people who come home. There's, you know, the first type of person comes back and they say, well, that was interesting, but it just wasn't for me. And the second type of person comes back and they left a piece of their soul over there. And they brought home a part of Afghanistan with them in their blood. I'm of the latter. You know, the Afghan people took me in as a guest in their country and made me feel so welcome that I felt like I was one of their own. I looked them in the eye and made them a promise and told them that America doesn't abandon its friends to be murdered by its enemies. And yet that's seemingly what we're doing. The Biden administration announced today, as I was waiting to go on air with MSNBC, I watched the press conference live from the State Department, in which they announced that there is a possibility that we'll be moving our embassy from the embassy grounds itself to the airport in Kabul. They've announced that we're sending back in 3,000 forces to help secure the airport in Kabul and facilitate the drawdown of the U.S. diplomatic presence in Kabul, as well as any American citizens who need to get out. And I guess they're also going to be helping whatever special immigrant visa applicants we can evacuate, again, seemingly only from Kabul. Still no plan announced by the administration on how we're going to get people who are outside of Kabul out of the country. You know, when the Biden administration inherited office, there were only 2,500 total troops in Afghanistan, and now they're sending in 3,000 just to secure the evacuation of Kabul. This is what losing looks like. And I just wish they would be honest with us, because the press conferences they held today seemed so disengaged from the reality on the ground. You know, it feels like the government is trying to fight the Taliban through, you know, through press statements with scolding in, you know, words. Like, harsh words are not going to stop them. Sometimes, in order to defend and protect human rights, you need to do it at the point of a gun. And I fear that we're at that moment. When a war ends, there are two questions that loom large. Was it worth it? And how did you end it? History gets to answer the former. Only we, however, get to answer the latter. And we're ending this war with profound shame. There is no honor in this exit. I fear that when we leave Afghanistan for good, we're going to do so in the middle of the night and not tell anybody, just like we did at Bagram. You know, the Biden administration has said, you know, privately to anyone, you know, who's been involved in this advocacy mission, what we've been told for a long time now is that the thing that they've feared the most is a chaotic evacuation. Well, in failing to actually take care of these people when we could have, which was just a couple of months ago before the Taliban had taken over. Again, imagine if, you know, just in February or March, when we still had troops in place and all these bases that we controlled, if we had just started moving people then and had done so over the last couple of months, like those of us who have been fighting to do this had recommended back then. We would have gotten these people out quietly. And by the time it was over, even if the Taliban had begun to launch this assault, we wouldn't have to worry about the slaughter of at least these individuals, the ones that we made a fundamental promise to. who are first in line for the Taliban's retribution. No, instead, the Biden administration chose to do nothing and left it to the 11th hour. And in so doing, have now created the very thing that they were most afraid of, a chaotic evacuation. I can't think of anything more chaotic. We have told the Afghans that if they want any chance of living, they have to get to one airport in the capital. What happens in the next couple of weeks when every Afghan in Kabul tries to get onto the airport? You know, the Biden administration has been so afraid of the idea of this image of a helicopter. The president said it, there's not going to be a helicopter that lifts off of the embassy in desperation, you know, as the Taliban sweep over Kabul. Well, it seems now that that very much could be the case, that the Taliban could sweep over Kabul, but he is right. You won't have an image of a helicopter lifting off of the embassy. And it's not just because the embassy might be closed and moved to the airport before that could transpire. No, the reason why is because, and this is what people just, I can't believe that people don't understand this or fail to get the importance of this. In Vietnam, that image in Saigon that everyone knows, that everyone is referencing in this, that helicopter, which by the way was not lifting off of the rooftop of the embassy, it was lifting off of the rooftop of the CIA station, which was next to the embassy. That helicopter didn't fly to the airport, because by that point the North Vietnamese had cratered the airport's runway, so there weren't planes that could land there. Now that helicopter flew to an aircraft carrier that was waiting off the coast of South Vietnam, up the coast of Saigon. And that's the thing about the Vietnamese evacuation. It wasn't planned. It happened in the last moments of the war, because Americans on the ground, often in complete disregard of the orders and the instructions of their superiors, did what they felt was necessary to try to save as many lives as possible. And they were fortunate in that they had an ocean and boats that they could work with, because most of the people that we evacuated were on the docks at Saigon. And those helicopters that everyone talks about that they don't want to replicate now in Afghanistan, those helicopters had ships they could fly to. There won't be helicopters in Afghanistan because there's no boats, because Afghanistan is a landlocked country. The nearest sea is thousands of miles away. Not thousands, a couple hundred miles away, but too far for a helicopter to fly. All right. No, the only people who are going to get out are people who can get on planes at the airport in Kabul. And let's make this abundantly clear. The Canadians have now announced they're closing their embassy. As of me recording this podcast, I just got an alert on my phone. The Turks have announced that they're closing their embassy, and that's really critical, because the Turkish embassy in Afghanistan is right next to the presidential palace. There is probably no more fortified or secure of an embassy in Afghanistan, with the exception of maybe the American and British embassies, than the Turkish embassy. If the Turks are truly leaving Afghanistan, which seems to be the case, that's a big deal, because the Turkish military is the one that currently guard the airport in Kabul. And all we've said is that we're sending in 3,000 troops to secure our withdrawal, to secure the American, you know, drawdown, and help with the remaining evacuation of SIV, eligible SIVs in Kabul. No end date on that mission. I hope it lasts until we literally truly get everyone out. But my fear is that they have a pre-selected number of people that they've decided those are the folks that they've played God. And they've decided these are the people who are going to live, and everyone else is just sort of good luck to you. If that truly is the case, if my suspicions are and my fears are correct, what that means is it'll be a matter of weeks before that this mission ends, and then the U.S. military will finally leave Afghanistan. And the Turks have made it clear that if we leave, they're going too. And once the Turkish military leaves, there will be no international security presence guarding the airport in Kabul, and that will be the nanosecond upon which flights to Afghanistan will cease, and there will be no pipeline, no means for these people to make their escape. We still can save these people. I know I sound like I must sound crazy at this point, hopelessly, you know, naive and optimistic, but that is the reality. we have the Air Force, we have the personnel, we have the riches, we have the power and the might. What we lack now, and it's clear, we probably have lacked it all along, is the courage and conviction to do the right thing. If you're an Afghan or an Iraq war veteran, you got to be hurting. I can tell. I can feel it. And when I say veteran, I don't just mean military. I mean frontline civilians as well, the diplomats, the aid workers. You know, we were all one team, one fight. Didn't matter if you were wearing a camouflage uniform like myself or a suit working at the embassy. We all served this difficult mission, and most of us walked away with a profound sense of an obligation to these people. I know I'm hurting. Reach out to your friends. Tell them you're hurting. Talk to someone. Don't bottle this up inside. I've been warned time and time again by Vietnam veterans that what comes next is a profound moral injury. And they've told me to look out for friends of mine who might think of harming themselves. So if anyone's listening to this and you've got, you know, thoughts of harming yourself, I'd ask that you call, you know, the proper hotline, the suicide hotline, or you can, you know, you can dial the Veterans Help hotline. You just Google it. So again, if you're thinking, if you feel like you might be intending to harm yourself, if this is just difficult, if you need to just talk to somebody, the number is 800-273-8255. Again, that's 800-273-8255. This is difficult. It's most difficult for our Afghan wartime allies who are now suffering the profound consequences of our failure. I hope that they can forgive us. I hope that future generations of Americans who are going to suffer the consequences of us having failed to keep this promise can forgive us. Most importantly, I hope that while it might be the 11th hour, the clock has yet to strike midnight. There is still time. These people are not dead yet. We can still save them. But I don't know if we're going to do it. Next week, we're going to be talking to some folks stuck behind in Afghanistan. We're going to be doing our best to actually reach people who are currently held under Taliban captivity, not imprisonment, but are in cities that the Taliban now control. We ask that you continue to keep tuning in. We want you to get involved. We ask that you now contact your member of Congress and the president and express your outrage that we've allowed this to occur. There is going to be a reckoning for this. I guarantee you, folks, we need to get to the bottom of this. We need to find out why we allowed this to happen. Why did these people get left behind to die? That needs to be answered. And I hope you'll join me in calling upon our government to have to answer that question, because we need to make sure that this never happens again. Because unfortunately, what I am now realizing is that the Vietnam vets were right. They said it happened in their war and they were afraid it was going to happen in mine. History is not guaranteed to repeat itself. It can change. History is made by people who show up. Keep showing up. We're going to keep making history. We have not finished this mission. The story has not had its ending written. There is still time. Keep fighting, folks. And for our Afghan brothers and sisters and our Iraqi brothers and sisters listening, America, while the government might have forgotten you, American people have not. We're going to keep fighting for you. Never count us out. We hope you joined us next time. Thanks for tuning in.